Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Peter Barbella, who wrote a fascinating book here, if you could see it, 1,800 kilometers in a Fiat 500, about his adventure, I should say his adventure with his wife, about tracing his roots. So welcome, Peter. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My honor.
Well, we'll find out by the end of the thing if it's your honor or not. But so my first question for you is, I know you got the bug to do your ancestry research. So how did that come about and why did you start all of that?
That's an interesting story. We were entertaining some friends one time who was a genealogist. And we had a book in our possession that was given to us by one of my wife's uncles, who was also an avid genealogist. And we had never looked at it because genealogy had never been in my blood whatsoever. And I never thought about it. I was an engineer. I'm interested in science and radar and things like that. But Phil, my friend, took the book and started looking at it. And all of a sudden, he looks at my wife. He says to her, "We're cousins," he says. And he shows her in the book how it shows that she goes back to Richard Warren on the Mayflower. Okay, on her mother's side, she goes back to the Mayflower, and so did Phil. And Phil encouraged her to connect with her genealogy and join the Mayflower Society. So she set off to do that. And she started getting into trouble with the computer. And because I've worked with computers all my life, I went and helped her. I tried to help her. And we found some fascinating stories about her English relatives, the Hammond family, and how they lived. And it was just unbelievable what was pouring out of the computer, the history that these people had. And we connected her back and we got her into the Mayflower Society. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a group of people who, descendants of the Mayflower passengers.
Sure, yep.
So all of a sudden I started thinking, what about my family? And I picked up my father's papers. He's already passed, right? My father's gone already. But he left me some papers. He left me a bag of pictures with no captions on them. But I found a marriage certificate for his mother and father, Francesco Barbella. And it said who their mothers and fathers were. And the next thing I know, on Ancestry.com, I found a record of a passport that talked about Pietro Barbella. He gave his exact birth date, and it said he came from the town of Sassano in Italy, which is south of Naples. So at the time, this is years ago, at the time, the things that we had to work with were microfiches from Family History Center. So I looked at it, Sassano, in the year 1867, he was born, and I found on the internet that the Mormons had a tape for that particular year. And I ordered it. I mean, it was like $4 or $5. You order the tape by, have you ever researched at a Family History Center?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, you order the tape, they send the tape to the Family History Center. You go down here and you work with these cumbersome machines to roll the, but sure enough, I got to 1867 and I went to January the 29th or whatever the day was. And there was Pietro Barbella. Oh, at that point, I got all excited. And I started ordering the rest of the Sassano records and started working back. About the same time, more and more things became available on the internet. So it became easier and easier to do this. The first big advantage we had was a machine that you didn't have to, it was microfiche, but it was digitized. You could go to the page, you push a button and you get a file, a PDF file that you can put on your disc and take away. You could share the pictures. You could send them. It was a lot easier. And then all of a sudden, they stopped giving you the microfiches. They started putting it all out on the internet. So I had the entire set of civil records. You know the difference between civil records and parish records?
Yes, sure. Yep.
Okay. So I had all the civil records, and I started tracing Barbellas, and I had it pretty much done. And I said, I'd be interested to spread this family tree out. So I began a project that I call the Sassano Project. I started listing for every year of birth, every name in the civil records. One by one, I put down who the person was, who his father was, who his mother was. I listed them all for the first year they had was 1866. I did it for 1867. I went on and on. And I put these on Google spreadsheets, and I made them available with links to anyone who wanted to look at them, which is fine with me. And when I was done with that, I took the marriage records one by one, 1866 to 1910. Every year I listed who the bride was, who the groom was, and in most cases, who their parents were. Okay, so all of a sudden things started connecting, because when you get a bride and a groom and you see a parent, there's more things to connect. And I went through all of that, and I put it on my Google spreadsheets into my Sassano project. And then I took the death records and did the same thing. Well, when I was done, I had quite a few records there, and I was finishing it up, and a friend called me. I had a couple of people call asking for help. A good man named John Cavalloni, he called me one day and says, "This is really the greatest thing I've found. Now I can see my parents." But he had one that was lost in a different town, and we were able to find it. Well, he joined me with the project and started helping out. Then a third person joined me with the project, Pasquale Cerullo from New York area. He's a doctor in the New York area. And between the three of us, we had every record down. At that point, I decided that I had stretched out everything I could with Sassano Civil Records. And that was when I decided it was time to go to Italy and look through the parish records. So that's kind of a long story about how it started for me, but that's what it was like.
I think that's similar. I mean, not everybody, you know, goes that. I mean, I'm doing the similar kind of thing with a spreadsheet, trying to get down as many names. And what I'm doing is copying in the Antonati, you know, URL into that record, and trying to get some cousins to help me. But so far, that's been fruitless. I loved your Italy book. And I know at the beginning, you kind of warned people, you know, only crazy genealogists want to look at this book. But I found the way you put it together, going to each town, and especially bringing in the people that you met in Italy and how gracious they are. And I hear the same thing from everybody. But whatever prompted you, because I drove through Italy 25 years ago when I was about 45, I don't think I would do it again. What prompted you to get in a Fiat and drive 1,800 kilometers?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Well, the path was pretty well set out. The path was set out. But the original plan was to rent a BMW. I don't know if the part about the auto rental place was in the book.
It might. Yes, it is. Yeah, it's it.
But it's just, I was waiting and waiting and waiting for my BMW. And I says, I've had enough. Get me a car and get me out of this place. It happened to be the day that they were canonizing two saints in Rome. So Rome was very busy that day. The airport was very busy. And it was a buzz. But I jumped over to the Hertz line. He says, yeah, well, we have a Fiat. And I said, will it fit these bags? We had three huge bags with us. And he looked at them with a little question in his eye. But he said, I think they'll get in there. And they barely made it. The three bags barely made it into the back seat. But I got into the car, and it took me 3 or 4 minutes to remember how to drive a stick shift. And because the car was smaller, I think we were able to do more things. There are places we went to that I would not take a BMW. Honest to goodness. So part of the luxury trip we were going to take with the BMW was killed in Rome at the airport. That's it was available. The Fiat was available. That's why we got it.
I guess it was a blessing in disguise, because I know you described some of those narrow streets. I had a Fiat when we drove from Naples to Sorrento, and I had a Fiat, small Fiat. My son was just a baby, and we didn't have too many bags, so we fit okay. But we drove the Amalfi Coast, and I was glad that I had the Fiat driving the Amalfi Coast, because there was not a lot of room on that road. So I know one of your stops was to visit a mutual friend of ours, Michele Cartestulo, who runs the Surname Museum in Padula. And how did you, you know, meet up with Michele? And for anybody listening, he's one of my special people to go to. I have several now. But he's a great guy, and he's really, really a good genealogist. So how did you come across him?
You know, I think I found the Museo del Cognome on the internet. And I noticed it was in Padula, which is just a short distance from Sassano. And I made a note that I'm going to go over and talk to Michele and see if there's something he can do for me. And it was difficult because, as you pointed out, he doesn't speak a word of English. And my Italian was pretty awful, especially back then, even worse then. But we drove to Sassano, and we got in our hotel, and we tried to get into the church once one day, and the second day we had planned to take a ride over to Padula. So I drove to Padula, and we came into a piazza. And I says, now, how am I going to find Michele and his museum here? I don't have an address. I walked into a bar, and I said to the guy, I says, do you know Michele Cartusiello? And he says, Yeah, he said, yeah. And he says, where does he live? And then he gave me instructions about, oh, I'd say about 35 pages of instructions on how to walk to Michele's museum. Okay. Sounded like it was 4 or 5 miles. Gay was kind of, because of a bad experience we had in Salerno, Gay was not willing to go into narrow streets. She was not. And I came out of the bar, and I walked over to the car, and I told her, we've got to, it's probably a couple miles, we could walk it. But and just then, a guardian angel came out of the bar and came up to us. And he said, in pretty good English, I know how to get there. It's this way, that way, that way. And then he saw my eyes getting glazed over from the instructions. He said, aspetta. Get in my car, I'll take you there. Okay, that sounded like a good deal, except for one thing. The guy's doing 50 miles an hour down a road that just barely fits the car, okay? Gay left her finger marks in the back seat. But we got to the museum, and we went in, and Michele was expecting us, I think. We told him we were going to come. And we went in, and he has a fascinating museum in there. I don't know if he told you, at least he used to have a little theater where he would teach young kids.
Yeah, still there. Yes, still there.
He has charts all over the wall. he has charts of one of my wife's relatives, Sylvester Stallone, over in Palo del Col. He has charts for Frank Sinatra. He has Dean Martin. He has all kinds of stuff up there. Well, he showed us all these things. And we talked a little bit using the phone, a fancy phone. You know, he would say something and I would look at the phone and try to figure out what he said. And I would say something back to him and he would do the same with his phone. But we got across that I could probably get some extra work from him. He suggested that he goes up to the Archivio de Stato in Salerno, a place that we never got to. And he says he could look for some legal records up there for the Barbellas. He knew that I already had the civil records. And later on, he did that. He went up and he found three or four notarial records. In fact, I've just sent those off to your good friend, Elena.
Oh, good.
Gisi, to interpret, because I've looked at them for several years and just never could really figure out exactly what was going on. Somebody was selling land. Somebody had a child who was illegitimate. And there was these notarial records about this. And Eleanor's going to look at them for me. So she's doing that.
Yeah, and she's a sweetheart. And I sent her as a 43-page will from a Google Books, and she did a fantastic report on it. And you know what was good about it was she didn't translate it, you know, word for word, literally, and get you lost in the weeds. You know, she came up with about, I think out of that 43 pages, came up with about 13 pages. And then, you know, did some extra work on the side for a couple other things that she had found while she was doing that research. But yeah, she did a super job. So again, anybody who's listening, Elena Gisi, and we have a podcast about with her also. So great, great person.
I read that report. It was really well done.
Yes. Oh,
it's the reason I called her.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that was the last will and testament of my sixth great grand uncle, who left his fortune to my fifth great grandmother, or fourth great grandmother, I think. And I never knew what a Ducati was until I got that report. And then I looked at, you know, how much it's worth today, which is about $150. And he left her 100,000 Ducati, which is, I guess, quite a sum of money in 1760.
And you're still looking for it, aren't you?
Yes, I am. The funny thing, when I did the interview with Elena and we were talking about it, she said that Gaspari de Riso, she said, was a very, very strong-willed man, and that he, in this will, wanted to control everything, even beyond the grave, and for generations after. And that, you know, she gave me just a whole nother sense, besides just the written report, just a whole nother sense about, you know, what she felt about this man. And I don't think somebody, just a regular translator, would do that, you know. So now I know you leave Michele, and I think you went out there. I don't know was it the same area where you had the farm with the chickens and the roosters and everybody was waking you up in the middle of the night?
Oh, no. That was Palo del Col. That's the hometown of my wife's paternal side. We went back to Sassano. And of course, you know, we had a couple of trips up this hill. Gay was not going to let me drive the car up these roads. Okay, there's no way. So we're climbing a mountain. We're climbing a mountain, and can I show you something on the screen?
Yeah, sure. You could hold it up
like this.
Oh yeah, there you go. Perfect.
This is the town of Sassano. Over my other shoulder is the church.
I see it. Yeah.
You see, and we're parked at the bottom of that hill.
Oh wow.
And we went in and we asked some masons, how far is it? They says, oh, it's just a little way. That was about an hour and a half. I mean, no, it wasn't that bad. But, and we walked up the hill to the church, and the church was closed. And that was very bad. I was hoping to get into the church and go and see the records. And we met a couple of girls sitting there on the steps. And they told us the mass would be the next day. In the evening, there would be a mass. So I says, okay, we'll come back the next day. Actually, that was after our visit to McKelley. We came back to Sassano from McKelley. We were staying in a hotel. It's a beautiful hotel in that town. I don't know how it got there, but beautiful hotel at the bottom of the hill. And we were staying in a hotel that was right next to the brand new church that the priest, where his rectory was. And we simply couldn't find him. You know, every time I went there, he wasn't there. But we went up the next night, and the church was locked again. And that was kind of depressing. You know, I said, I'm not going to be able to get to the church. So we went out and had some food, and we were driving back to the hotel, and I stopped one last time to see if Don Otello was home, the priest. And the kids were always there playing soccer, and whenever they saw me coming, they would shake their head, no, it's not here yet. And again, they were shaking their heads, no. And you could see the garage was empty. But just then, Don Otello drove in the car. Like a miracle, he came in, and he knew about me. I got to tell you, you go into town like that, Bob, and no matter what you wear, they know you're an American. And they know you're a stranger. And people start looking out the windows at you to see who you where you're going, who you are. They come out to meet you. And they want to talk to you. And I had a couple that talked to me. But and Don Otello knew I was there. And he explained to me that the mass was going to be the next morning, and that he would let me in the office. So after that, we were sure to get up really early the next morning. Back up the hill we went. This was our third trip up that hill, okay? And sure enough, there was a mass there. Gay was standing there with a bunch of little old Italian ladies, and she's about a foot higher than the rest of them. You could tell who the American was with the red coat on. Everybody else had black. Right. So, it was a pretty church on the inside. It was actually very nice. And we sat there at mass, and mass was over. Don Otello signaled us to come into the back room. And that's where I found that 1700s record of the marriage of one of my, I don't know how many great grandfathers, McKelley Barbella. What's funny is that his father was Dominic Barbella, married to a woman named Curcio. Dianora Curcio had married Dominic Antonio Barbella. Well, some 22 or 23 years ago, my son Peter married a Laura Curcio from a neighboring town.
Wow.
So it's and we don't know if they're related, but probably not, but because those Curcios came from Calabria, I think. But I think it was strange that we had full circle like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So I know that you know, in the book, you talk about some people that you. You know, made contact over the internet. And I think there was also one of your last stops was a friend of yours that was back in Italy. So for people listening, how did you make those connections with people in Italy and then be able to meet them when you got there?
It was really Facebook, I think. I have to credit Facebook for all of these finds. If you go onto Facebook and you look up the town that you were born in, you're liable to find a group or a web page or something on Facebook that surrounds your town. There's two or three from Sassano, but the first one we had was in Speroni, which is up by Avellino, okay? And I found a young man there on one of those groups who was a member of the group. His name was Mascolo, which is my mother's name. And we started chatting, and we talked a little bit beforehand. And, you know, I told him we were coming. I told him where we were going to be. And I really didn't expect him to show up, but he did. He took us to his home for dinner. It was just a wonderful evening. And he introduced me to a young man named Sorice. And now I have Sorices in my line also. My mother's mother was a Sorice. And my mother was a Mascola. So they came from that town. And we had a good evening with them, a good dinner. Others we had over in Palo del Col, we had the Tricaricos. That's my wife's father's name. And we were long in contact with them, also on Facebook. And they knew we were coming. And we didn't know they were going to show up. But sure enough, they did. Took us under their wing. Took us to their home. We ate dinner with them. They took us to an outdoor mass, big festival in Palo del Col. It was really a very, very a happy time.
Yeah, I hear so many stories like that, especially when you come across family members who didn't even know that they maybe had relatives in the United States. I mean, that's the way it was with my maternal grandmother, Pio Malo. I had no idea that I had, you know, third and fourth cousins in Italy from that family. And they had no idea that, you know, they had somebody here. And we were supposed to meet them last April. We were thinking maybe we're going to get there September, but I don't know the way things are going in Italy. We may not get there till next year again. But I want to ask you, I know you had a very adventurous last stop on the trip just before getting to Rome. I think you stayed above a pool hall or something like that.
Yeah, I picked these hotels kind of blindly. Well, yes and no. The hotel in Sassano was unique. And you look at it, and it's a huge hotel. And you say, what is this doing here? Because it doesn't look anything like the rest of the city at all. Mm-hmm. The Park Hotel Montpellier is in Sassano. Probably got 100 rooms. Okay. But the thing is, when we drove in there, and I think I put this in the book, the place was empty. Actually, it was closed. Okay. We couldn't even get in the door. And we drove away scratching our heads saying, what are we going to do now? I got no place to stay. We got reservations in this hotel. And we drove, maybe 50 yards down the road. And I went into a driveway to ask one of the neighbors if he knows why the hotel was closed. And I was able to get that question across with decent enough Italian that a young man who was listening to us, he took his phone out, called somebody, and then he said, guarda, look. And there the gate was opening. he woke somebody up from siesta, and they opened the gate and let us in. So but we were, honest to goodness, we were the only patron of the hotel while we were there.
Wow.
it's got 100 rooms, and we're the only ones there. The others was the farm Agriturismo. I just wanted to try an Agriturismo, and it turned out to be a real winner. Mm-hmm. The best place was recommended to me by my cugino Antonella Barbella, who is a professional cook that lives in Amsterdam. And she comes from the Lanciano area. When we went up to Chieti, we stayed at a place called Rifugio Mare, which just looks out over the Adriatic Sea. It was just stunning. It was absolutely stunning. Now, let's get into Rome. Okay. That's the last one I picked, and it was kind of by throwing a dart. It looked like it was decent, okay. And it turned out it wasn't that bad, but it was a little bit scary. My thought was this: I wanted to drive to some place within striking distance of the airport so that I could in the morning take the car, get rid of it, and get on our plane home, rather than take the car in when we got to Rome and find a hotel in Rome. So I picked this place. It's called El Paradiso.
Okay.
Yes, and indeed it was over a pool hall. It was kind of like a bar and a pool hall, all mixed together. It's the only place where the guy asked me to pay before he gave me the key. Okay. And he gives me this huge key. He took us up to the room. The room was in possibly the darkest and dingiest place you could see. I mean, it was really dark in here and scary. And Gay had her rosary beads out that night. She was saying a rosary. I took all our bags and piled them in front of the door so I'd hear something if somebody was trying to get in. And but, you know, we slept and we had a good time. We had a good breakfast. The cook downstairs, Maria, what else, was very chatty with us. She wanted to know all about the Americani. So we survived it.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, it's a fun book, and the adventure was a lot of fun. And it's 1,800 kilometers in a Fiat 500. And if anybody wants to buy the book, how would they find it?
It's on Amazon. If you look on Amazon, it's there.
Okay, and yeah, I'll put a link out there. And then one final question for anybody who's planning a trip like this when Italy opens up, or you know, wants to do a genealogy tour similar to what you did, what would be your advice to them?
Number one, go. Don't think about it. Go. You'll be happy you did. The number two, and maybe equal to go, is do all the genealogy you can in the United States before you go. Get it all done. The Archivio di Stato's that we went to had plenty of records. We had a lot of those records already, but we went to see the real thing. And you can find records there, but if you have some knowledge of those records already, it will help you when you're in these library-like places. They're all different. You need to know a little bit of Italian. Down in southern Italy, we did not run into a place where there was an English-speaking person in an Archivio di Stato. We had to get some Italian across in order to let them know what we wanted. So know a little bit of Italian. Do everything you can to research your family here first. And then think about where you want to go. We knew we were going to the Mother Church in Sassano. That was the big one for us. We knew we were going to go to Ufficio di Anagrafes. You know what those are, Bob?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, places where they keep records.
Where they keep the records, yeah.
We found a wonderful record in Vasto over by the Adriatic. But we knew we wanted to see those, and we planned those out. And then go, do it. Just do it. Of course, in this age of COVID, I'm not sure that's really good advice, but.
Yeah, no, I know. And well, hopefully, if not this year, I'm sure by next year, things will be getting back to normal. They seem to be getting back to normal here a little bit. So, I really appreciate you taking the time. This has been fascinating to go through the book with you after reading it. And I encourage everybody who's planning a genealogy tour or wants to drive a lot through Italy to pick up the book. It's a fun read. So thanks again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Bob, and my honor.